Hallå! Oerhört imponerande att ni alla kommit hit för att titta på mig. Eller hur? Jättekul att så många har kommit hit. Jag heter Johan Lindfors. Jag ansvarar för den tekniska evangeliseringen på Microsoft i Sverige. Jättekul att så många har valt att komma till Kina Teatern och lyssna på skott idag. Tänkte bara innan vi börjar berätta lite om vad dagen kommer att innehålla. Vi kommer att ha en presentation nu fram till lunch vid 11.30. Vi bjuder på lunch. Lunch serveras sedan inne på Bern, som jag förstått rätt. En timme. Och sen så samlas vi tillbaka. Så fortsätter vi och pratar om MVC 2.0. Fram till en fika vid 14:15. Tar vi en halvtimmes paus igen med lite kaffe. Och sen så 14:45 så kommer vi prata Silverlight 4. Och allt det här kommer Scott att prata om. Jag vill också uppmuntra er att ta kontakt med våra partners som är här. Vi har Baloo som har hosting-sidan egentligen. Och redan har lite erbjudande runt ASP.net 4.0 om ni vill prova på det. Vi har Inmeta som naturligtvis hjälper till med försäljning av Visual Studio. Återkommer till det snart också. Vi har också AdSkills för utbildning och för er som vill gå ännu djupare i de här teknikerna. Där finns en hel del alternativ redan idag att titta på. Jag vill också att ni kommer att när ni går härifrån sen få ett litet vykort med det som vi kallar för Visual Studio, det Ultimate Offer. Där det redan idag går att uppgradera till MSDN Premium och då se till att ni får tillgång till Visual Studio 2010 i fränare versioner, om jag säger så, än vad ni kan köpa idag då egentligen. Vilket innebär att om ni köper Team Developer idag så kommer ni få Ultimate då i nästa version och sånt där. Där kommer ni få reda på också lite senare egentligen, men det är det erbjudande som vi har till er egentligen här för att ni har tagit er hit och lyssna på Scott. So, without any further delay, I'm very happy and honored to present Scott Guthrie, the Vice President of Microsoft and the Developer Division. And Scott, take it away.
Cool. Please. Thanks so much. Well, thanks so much for coming today. Hopefully, we have a lot of content over the next couple hours. This is my first trip to Sweden, and so I'm really happy to be here. Unfortunately, only here for a day, but I've already seen enough of the city that I know I absolutely want to come back to Stockholm, and hope to be able to come back here again soon. In terms of what the day looks like, I have a bunch of talks that I'm planning on giving. Hopefully the goal with all these talks is to make them fairly interactive. So please ask questions along the way. Shout out things. Ask me hard questions. Try to embarrass me. Throw things at me. The more interactive we can make it, hopefully the more informative it'll be throughout the day. In terms of the talks I have three talks that I'm giving. I think there's some additional talks as well that you'll see. First talk I'm giving is on ASP.NET 4 and Visual Studio 2010 for web development. So it will cover a bunch of other things around VS 2010 and .NET, but it's primarily focused on from a web development lens. There's so much in .NET 4 and VS 2010, it's actually hard even with 6 hours to get all the content in there. I'm then going to do a talk a little bit later on this afternoon on ASP.NET MVC, and in particular cover both it from a broad perspective and then also talk about some of the new 2.0 features that are coming with that. And then I'm going to do a talk on Silverlight 4 this afternoon and talk about some of the exciting things that are coming as part of that release. So again, please make it interactive. Ask questions along the way. Hopefully we'll have some fun. So I mentioned the first talk I'm going to give is on VS 2010 and ASP.NET 4 web development. How many people here are doing ASP.NET today? Oh, no one. Oh, okay, good. No, cool. Lots of people here. So if I don't answer any of your questions today, do feel free to send me an email. My email address is scottgu@microsoft.com. And then also I have my Twitter and my blog address there. I should actually mention in terms of what I do. So I do work in the developer division, as was mentioned. And I kind of run the teams that build some of the core .NET, so things like the CLR and the base class libraries. And then I'm specifically responsible for our web stack, so ASP.NET, IIS, and our media server, Silverlight and WPF, some of the new mobile things that were going to come out next year, and then the Visual Studio tools for doing client and web development and mobile development. So kind of a broad set of things. With that, let's go ahead and get started. How many people here have actually downloaded the Beta 2 release of VS 2010 and .NET 4 already? Okay, cool. A number of people have. Great. For those of you who haven't, or even for those of you who have, the release that we're coming out with next year with VS 2010 and .NET 4 is a pretty big one for .NET and for Visual Studio, and one I'm pretty excited about in that I think it brings a ton of new features and a ton of new value. But also kind of fundamentally, I think it's a release that just makes development hopefully easier. We try to focus a lot with this release on not just adding features, but really trying to nail the common scenarios and focus a lot of effort not on just new features, but on how we make existing features better and cleaner. And so throughout the day, hopefully you'll see lots of cases, both big and small, where we've just kind of gone back to existing features, tweaked them a little bit, try to respond to a lot of the feedback that you've given us over the years, and try to just sort of make for a cleaner experience. And hopefully what you'll see with a lot of these demos, including some of the ones I'll start off with here, is a whole bunch of features that don't require you to spend, you know, days or weeks or hours studying new things. But a lot of features that you can go, oh, I can immediately take advantage of that and don't require a bunch of training. And so hopefully the end result is a release that provides a lot of value and a lot of value quickly that you can immediately take advantage of. In addition, kind of trying to make sure that we get the end-to-end scenarios right, we're also trying to make sure that we focus on extensibility and customization throughout it. And so you'll see a lot of examples of where hopefully things look fairly smooth between the framework and the tool. I'll call out, though, along the way, a lot of points where if you don't want to do it exactly the way I'm doing it, you can actually plug in an alternative way to do it. And so we focused a lot on also trying to make sure that not only does the out-of-the-box scenarios work well, but also you can customize and extend it in rich ways throughout. With that, enough slides. Let's show some demos. So what I'm going to do is pop into Visual Studio 2010. All the demos I'm going to show here today are with the public beta 2 build of Visual Studio 2010. So you can actually download everything I'm going to show today and basically try it out on your own. What I have loaded here is I'm going to show a couple of just sort of general improvements to VS 2010 from a code editing perspective. So even before we talk about new features in a framework or ASP.NET, let's just focus on, you know, kind of ways that we make kind of the day in and day out coding experience with VS hopefully a lot better. And to show that off, I'm actually got VS loaded and I've opened a project which is a fairly large project, which is the ASP.NET MVC project. This is actually, you can download this source from CodePlex today. We've released the source under an open source license. And it's, I don't know, it's maybe 20,000-30,000 lines of code. So it has enough code in there that I can show off some of these coding features fairly well. So first question I have in terms of just IDE usage. How many people here have multiple monitors? Okay, number of people have. You know, I always joke with people, well, Visual Studio has always supported multi-monitors. You just load two versions of it and stick one on one screen and one on the other screen, and you have multiple monitors. With VS 2010, though, we've made it better, which is so you can actually have one version of Visual Studio and actually now share it across multiple monitors. And so, again, going on kind of small, but hopefully make your life a little bit easier. Things you can now click any window, whether it's a text editor window, whether it's a designer, whether it's a tool window. You can now remove it from the core IDE shell. And if I did have a second monitor up here, I could basically drag it to any of those monitors, expand it, and dock it into that separate monitor. And so now you can, you know, within a single project, share code across multiple screens and get kind of a nice editing experience that takes advantage of the additional screen real estate and monitor usage that you have. Kind of a couple other kind of improvements. One of the things that we focused on with VS 2010 is just how do we make code editing and code discovery scenarios a lot easier, since we spend a lot of time as developers staring at code. And so some of these things, again, are small and subtle, but hopefully make for a much cleaner experience. One of which now is if you ever click on a variable, so say, for example, a parameter to a method, or you click on anything within the method, just a subtle thing you'll notice is when they'll highlight all the instances of that variable or that parameter inside a code block. And that's true for both fields and classes as well as parameters into methods. And likewise, if I click on, you know, something inside here, all the usages of it will show up. Just makes it a little bit easier to kind of see how the code's being used and to discover it. Everyone here's probably used IntelliSense a lot over the years, and Good news is VS 2010 still has IntelliSense support. But one of the things that we've also tried to do is just make a number of sort of nice but subtle improvements to IntelliSense that makes discoverability of code a lot easier when you're writing code. And so, you know, oftentimes when you're searching for a method or you're searching for a class, you don't remember the exact name of it. And so if I say this dot, and let me zoom in so that people can see. So if I say this dot, you know, I have a whole bunch of members on a particular type. And if I want to get to, say, get parameter values, you know, the way today I do it is I type, you know, get param, scroll down, hit tab in order to autocomplete. And that's a couple of extra keystrokes that I might not want to do. And there's a chance I might not actually remember that it starts with get. I just know there's something to do with parameters with this particular type. And so what we've done with VS 2010 is we added to the IntelliSense engine support so that you don't have to actually start with the actual method name when you type now. You could actually just type param, and it'll automatically start filtering based on any usage of that term anywhere within the method. And so now it's much quicker to basically go ahead and find something, select, and tab complete. So fewer keystrokes, and it helps in general with just sort of overall discoverability trying to look up code. We've also added support that sometimes it's called either Pascal searching or sometimes you'll hear it called camel case search with IntelliSense, which takes advantage of the fact that within .NET our naming patterns are to have the first letter of each word inside a member or a type be capitalized. You can now take advantage of this with IntelliSense. So if I want to actually go to get parameter values, I could type param, or I could actually just type get GPV. And it'll actually filter based on just those words that actually start with those letters within the IntelliSense engine. And so if you know exactly what you're typing, you know, now in three characters, I can immediately complete to that long method. And this works not just for member IntelliSense, it also works for type IntelliSense as well. Other things that we kind of focused on within the overall IDE experience is sort of how do you find code? So not only, you know, with IntelliSense, but how, when you have a large project, how do you actually figure out where is this thing being used? Where is this thing defined? You know, a lot of times people, you know, name the file the exact same name as the class is one way to find things. But as soon as you have a lot of code, like I do in this project, you end up having to scroll a lot as you want to open different files. And if you have types that don't match your file names, you know, a lot of times people end up doing find across all files looking for a particular usage or a particular declaration of something. That's fairly inefficient from a coding perspective. So one of the things that we've added with VS 2010 is a feature we call kind of the Navigate To dialog. So you basically use control comma, and it brings up this dialog here called Navigate To. And what you can see here is I can basically type, let's say, cache. And this will immediately show me all usages of any types within my project or my solution that have the word cache in it. And so now I can quickly say, oh, controller descriptor cache. That's actually what I'm looking for. Hit enter, and I immediately jump to that particular file within my source file, source tree. So, and this works. The nice thing is this works not only for things that start with that, but I could also use that GPV, and I can now find anything inside this list that actually uses that Pascal casing GPV in terms of either parameter or types. And again, I can now quickly go to that, hit enter, and immediately find that location within the code. That's always kept up to date, regardless as you're making changes or refactoring your code base. So it's very quick, very easy, very fast in order to find anything. A lot of times when you're working with code, you know, one of the common questions is not, so once you find it, this render, say for example, this render view method, you know, a common question is, how am I using it? And so, yeah, again, you can use search across your project to figure out every possible place that calls this. Or you can take advantage of a new feature, which you right-click, and it's called View Call Hierarchy. And what this does is it'll now show you all the places within your code base that invoke this method. And so I can drill in and see, oh, it's actually being called from these two places within my source tree. You can even expand these and figure out who in turn calls those methods that in turn call you. And at any point, you can just double click in order to jump to that location. You can also see where are there, what other things are being called from that point. You can see, is there anything that overrides this method in a subclass? And basically kind of understand the overall call hierarchy in terms of how something's invoked. Again, this is always kept up to date. And so again, as you're looking at code and exploring code, it makes it much quicker for you to figure out how it's being used, where it's being called, et cetera. How many people have ever had a large chunk of code where someone says, hey, you know what, we should actually have a diagram that we all understand how this code, the code flow execution through this code looks like? Anyone ever? Yeah, and you get a whiteboard and you try to draw it, and you know, it usually stays up to date for at least an hour. And then it changes. And so one of the things that we've done with some of the Visual Studio products as well is added support so you can do something a little bit richer in terms of doing code flow analysis. And we call it sort of sequence diagramming. And so you can right-click and you can say, for example, generate sequence diagram. This will allow you to pick, do you want to do it for just your solution? How deep do you want to go in the call graph? Do you want to support, say, for example, system namespaces or not? I'm going to hit OK. This will basically analyze your code base basically build a call sequence diagram and show you kind of the overall control flow for whatever method or whatever class you selected inside there. We even do, I like this actually, this is sort of, whoever did this was a nice polish work. So you see the particular diagrams here. If you scroll down, we actually still show it even though it's off the map, which I've discovered doing presentations on 1024 by 768 is really useful. What's nice about this is it's interactive. So you can actually not only generate it, but you can actually go in and change the sequence diagram as well. And you can basically customize the actual layout as well yourself. And so you can represent synchronous, asynchronous patterns, whatever you want within that diagram. Keep it up to date. You can then save it as a file, check it into your source tree. Anyway, it helps again with just sort of being able to look at code, understand how code's being used, and hopefully at end result, write better code as well. Other kind of editor improvements, bunch here. This one, for some reason, everyone always really likes, and so I haven't been able to figure out practically why I'd ever use this, but it seems to people like it. It's basically called vertical selection. And so basically you hold down the Alt key, you can now select blocks vertically, and then you can actually now, you see, everyone laughs. It works. Yeah. Anyway, a bunch of editor improvements throughout the stack that you can take advantage of. All the editor you're seeing here, as well as everything right now inside the overall IDE, is built with WPF. So this is the editor is now 100% of a WPF-based app. And so a lot of the features we've been able to add and the sequence diagram thing as well, is basically we're building on top of the core framework, taking advantage of some of those productivity and capability enhancements. And what's nice about the overall editor, and again the IDE, is it's fully extensible. So all the things I've shown here just work out of the box. In the second talk I'm going to do on ASP.NET MVC, I'm going to show off some of the new test-driven development coding improvements that we've also added to the workflow or to the text editor. So if you want to basically, for example, write against a type or methods that don't yet exist, we now have a mode that we call consume first IntelliSense, which works well for TDD that you can flip into. I can code against it, and then I can generate from usage. So a lot more editor features I'll cover specifically around TDD in the second talk. But the nice thing is all these features are built into the editor, but everything's extensible. And so, expect to see a lot of people build extensions that plug into the overall text editor and the IDE and customize it in really rich ways. And a lot of that's through the power of WPF and the power of something else that's new in .NET 4 we call MEF, or the Managed Extensibility Framework, which basically provides kind of an extensibility mechanism that makes it really easy for people to extend things. So I've shown off a bunch of just sort of code editing improvements. Let's look at a couple other improvements as well in the web editing space. So I'm going to open another project here, which is a snippets project. And One of the things that we've had in VS for a few releases now is this concept we call code snippets, which provide, obviously an easy way that you can encapsulate common functionality and with a few keystrokes kind of auto-expand and edit things. And what we've done with VS 2010 is we're adding snippet support to both the HTML editor as well as the JavaScript editor and allow you to take advantage of snippets there as well. So a lot of people are using ASP.NET. Today, if I want to build a text box, I can either drag and drop it from the toolbox, or I can type ASP, angle bracket ASP colon text box tab to complete it. What you can do now with VS 2010 is just type text box tab tab, and it'll auto complete and give you the full server control declaration. And so, if you want to do, for example, let's say ID equals Sweden. I can then do crowd field editor, tab, tab. This will actually give me a validator control. Notice it automatically set the control validate property based on the text box before it, and we could say, required field as my text box. So, basically everything, all the server controls you can auto-complete. Things like anchor tags, you can do tab, tab. You can add to your snippets replaceable regions. So you can just use the tab key without having to use the mouse in order to switch before things. Click here. We also have a run at thing. You just do tab, tab, and it'll auto do the server control for you. If you want to do things like script blocks, script, tab, tab, will automatically add the JavaScript declaration. Same things for styles, etc. So just makes for life a little bit easier as you're doing working within the editor. This works for JavaScript as well. So if I want to add, say, a control using ASP.NET Ajax, I can type control, tab, tab. It'll give me kind of the rough scaffold of a control declaration. I could say Sweden.ui, tab, Skagoo, tab. And notice it's updated everything, and now I basically have a control declaration that I can go ahead and use. So we have this for ASP.NET Ajax, we have for jQuery, and what's nice about snippets is they're extensible, and we have an online gallery. You can basically download any of these and publish them for others to use. How many people here have ever coded a bug? I haven't either, but we all know people that have. So a couple of things that we've done in VS 2010 that I thought I'd actually walk through. One is improvements to the overall debugging experience. We'll open up this project. What I have here is a simple, very simple little app, which basically does division. And so I can say 45 divided by 9, and hit F5, and I get 5. Let's do 45 divided by 0, hit divide, hit F5. And you'll notice right now I have a problem. My result is coming back blank. Basically, I have a bug inside this app, which is I don't handle divide by 0 situations very well. So if we want to debug this today, obviously, I can set a breakpoint. I can drill into this particular method. And so here I'm sort of stepping over my code. So obviously, VS supports this and has supported this for a long time. What's new in VS 2010 is an option we call IntelliTrace, which now allows me to both step forward inside the debugger as well as step backwards. And so I can actually step through my code here, and I can then use this back arrow, and now you can see I'm actually stepping back up the stack trace as well. And so I can go forwards and backwards now within my debugger and actually see the state, my call stack, my auto watch window automatically change regardless of whether I'm going forward or backwards within the experience. Better yet, I can now actually take a call dump of information from an application that's crashed, either a client app or a server app on a different machine. And they can actually dump all of this IntelliTrace information. And I can basically then on my development machine load up that information. And I can actually now debug forward and backwards the state of the app when it crashed on a separate machine. We kind of call this feature kind of the flight recorder feature or the black box feature, which I'm taking like 12 flights this week. And so when I talk about planes crashing, I always kind of wince a little bit. But But when they do crash, there's this black box, and you can basically look at the last 30 minutes of data. You know, the goal with this IntelliTrace feature is now you can do the same thing within Visual Studio. You know, when someone says, hey, the bug occurs in this particular case, you can basically take that dump information as a developer, load it up inside the IDE, and step forward and backwards within your code to try to figure out what led up to that crash. And you can see all the state information that led to it on their machine. There's a bunch of other Visual Studio testing features in the enterprise level tools, so Premium and Ultimate, that I'm not going to get a chance to cover today. But some of them include, for example, a manual test runner so that you can actually have people test without having to have Visual Studio installed if they want to do interactive testing. We also have a pretty nice feature where you can actually capture a video of a problem so that someone can actually say, here's this bug, just record, quickly snapshot the steps that led up to it, hit save, and it'll automatically store it inside TFS or your source control system and attach the IntelliTrace information with that bug. So it makes it much easier to kind of workflow within things. And just a whole bunch of tools around overall test and lab management of machines that you can take advantage of within Visual Studio now as well. You'll also notice then, from a stack trace perspective within Visual Studio, within the debugger, when IntelliTrace is enabled, there's a bunch of additional stack information here that's displayed on the right-hand side. And so you can actually now see, in addition to the call stack information, a whole bunch of information around that's kind of more human readable that kind of describes the steps that led up to that. And so, for example, instead of just seeing the ASP.NET call stack, you can see the save state completed step occurred, a post occurred, we raised a postback event, the divide button click event was raised, and then we hit a breakpoint. And so it makes it much easier also than to jump to that location and see exactly what's going on. Question? So the question is, how do you configure an application to save the stack trace if it crashes? So how do you take the crash dump, effectively? I think Tess actually has a really good video on this that you can actually see. You do need to, on the machine that's running the app, you do need to enable tracing before the app crashes, so it's not completely automatic from the application perspective. But basically, there's a command line tool you can run. There might also be a UI tool you can run prior to running the application. And then when that crash occurs, you can basically capture it and save it to a file. And I think the trace dump file, I think, is a text file. So you can actually parse it with any type of tool and then load it directly within Visual Studio. Tess here actually has a bunch of videos on Channel 9 that actually walk through some of the improvements around dump debugging and VS 2010 debugging that I highly recommend in terms of seeing exactly how you do that. Okay, yeah, Tess just mentioned that she'll also be blogging about this particular feature shortly. Do people know Tess? Tess is, knows more about debugging and than anyone on my team. So, and she's based here in Stockholm, so, and works for Microsoft. Another question in the front? Cool. So, last productivity feature, which I don't know if it really counts as a feature or just we fixed a common complaint. The add reference dialog. I've never demoed the add reference dialog before, and I've usually stayed away from it in demos, partly because it takes a long time to come up. And so you can see now, let's watch that again. It comes up immediately. Yeah, there we go. This alone will save you more time than any other feature in VS 2010. But basically, you'll notice it now comes up immediately, goes to the projects dialog instead of pulling in the entire .NET list. You can do browse and recent, so you no longer blocks. And then when you do click on the .NET or COM list, this will actually, the list of it will now populate asynchronously, and you can always hit cancel. And so it makes it much easier, much quicker to add references and not spend a lot of time going, ooh, I wish I hadn't clicked that. I'm not really going to call that a feature, but it's a nice thing to have. So let's talk a little bit about ASP.NET 4. So there's a lot of features coming with ASP.NET 4 for web development. In terms of a couple of the core areas I'm going to be covering today, I'm going to cover a little bit about some of the improvements to web forms. We'll talk about some of the improvements coming to Ajax and JavaScript editing. I'll talk about some of the model view controller capabilities and then kind of some of the core improvements that we're just adding throughout the stack. Let's talk first about web forms. How many people are using web forms? Cool. And since I can't see most of the audience, the people I can see, it looks like there's a lot of hands. The good news is ASP.NET 4 has a bunch of improvements in the web form space. And a lot of those improvements, going back to the kind of focusing on, you know, how do we make things cleaner, how do we make things simpler, are both new features, but also kind of enhancements and refinements to existing features and pain points that people complain about today. You know, one of the things, again, going back to the how do we just make things cleaner, what I thought I'd do is actually just start with a quick demo of the file new project. I'm going to go ahead and create a new application. One of the things you'll notice in the new project dialog for ASP.NET is for each of our application types, both for web forms as well as for MVC, we both have a out-of-the-box kind of starter template that gives you kind of a rough scaffold of an app that you can start off with, as well as an empty template. And so if you want an empty web forms app or an empty MVC app, you can now select that as well. And there's no default content. We've tried to keep it really clean so that if you just want to start with a blank slate, you can do it. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and create an empty web form project right now. And as you can see, it's empty with the exception of web.config file. Today with .NET 3.5 SB1, if you ever do with VS 2008 a new ASP.NET app and look at the web.config file, you notice there's a lot of stuff in it. And that's partly because 3.5 SB1 of .NET built on top of the .NET 2 runtime. And so new assemblies that we added in later releases, we ended up having to register things in the web.config file, which works, except, you know, again, makes things feel a little bit more complicated than it should. With VS 2010 and .NET 4, you now have a nice clean web.config file. This section right here is actually going to go away, we think, by the time .NET 4 ships. And so all you now have is a simple compilation tag and that's it. So again, starts off much cleaner out of the box. Also, one of the things you'll notice when you look at web.config files is there is now a way that you can go ahead and customize configuration settings based on the mode that you're in. So you can actually have debug-specific settings. You can have release-specific settings. You can also create staging, testing, and Scott Goo settings, or whatever you want to call it. You can have any number of web.config subsections that you want as part of your editing experience. And I'll talk a little bit later on when we get to the deployment section of this talk. One of the nice improvements is now within VS 2010, when you deploy an app, either through the IDE or from a command line or from a continuous integration server, you can pick which version of the config files you want to use, and we'll basically deploy that right version. So inside the IDE, you can use the debug version. You can then set up an automated build process that pushes your staging server and only copies the staging configuration sections. And what's nice about the way this configuration system works is instead of duplicating the settings in the config files, you actually start off with a master web.config file like I'm showing here, and then the sub files actually are only the deltas from the master, and so you don't have to duplicate things. You can put most of the things in that main file and then just indicate what changes you want for debug or release within underneath it. Question, yeah? Good question. So the question is, can you target the older versions of the .NET framework with the new Visual Studio 2000? Okay. So there's actually two questions. I'll answer your question, then I'll answer one additional question that I thought of as I was listening to your question. .NET 4 is compatible with .NET 2. .NET 4 is what's called a .NET 4 is what's called a side-by-side release of .NET. So if you remember going from .NET 1.1 to .NET 2, that was our last side-by-side release that we did. And what side-by-side means is that we have a separate version of the CLR, and that applications will either can bind to either the older version or the new version. .NET 3.0 and 3.5 are examples of what we call a non-side-by-side release, in that they added new framework assemblies, but they still use the existing .NET 2 CLR. Apps basically ran using the older CLR, but with the new libraries. The nice thing about a side-by-side release is it means that any existing apps you have can continue to work against the old CLR and the old libraries. So you can install .NET 4 on a server or on a client and not have to worry about retesting any of your applications. They'll continue to work using the existing .NET that they were built and compiled against. What's nice, though, is that .NET 4 is a compatible release, so you can also then take your applications and bring them forward to run on .NET 4 as well. And so you should not need to recompile your applications in order to use .NET 4. But if you have a large app and you're like, I just don't have time to test it with .NET 4, you can keep it running against .NET 2. And if you're using, for example, IIS, either with IIS6 or with IIS7, you'll notice, let's say, for example, if I build a new application. So I'm going to say add application. I could say, call it, zoom in. I could call it Sweden. I can point to a disk. When I select the app pool, you'll notice here I can actually run the default app pool, which would be .NET 3.5, or I can actually run with an ASP.NET 4 specific app pool. So you can now choose which versions of .NET you want to run an ASP.NET app against directly within your server. But again, your existing apps can continue using the old .NET. They can also be brought forward and use the new .NET CLR as well. So it should be a highly compatible release. The other thing that we do have is when you create a new project, we do have multi-targeting support. So you can actually choose which version of .NET you want to build a new project with. And so if you want to, you could say, let's actually build it with .NET 1 or .NET 2. It'll filter to only show... hit the wrong key. It will filter to only show you the application templates that work with .NET 2. If I create it, you'll actually see the same web.config file that you'd see with .NET 2, the same file that you see with .NET 2. And what's nice is IntelliSense will only show you the properties for .NET 2. So, for example, if I do, let's say, ASP data grid, it equals foo. If you pull up like the property browser here, and look at properties, you'll see that there's a CSS class, but that's the only property that starts with a C. Is that right? Yeah. Trying to make sure that's the property I'm going to show that's new. So I got an ASP.NET app. I can compile this, run it with .NET 2. I can also then pull up the properties of the app. Change the version to target .NET 4. Hit yes. This basically updated the app and updated the config file, so it would actually remove all the .NET 3.5 references and just have a clean web.config file. And what you'll notice now is when I go to the data grid and look in the property grid, it still says CSS class. Wait a second, what did I do? Yes, I actually should do it in alphabetical order. And when I do that, thankfully, someone in the audience is smarter than me. You'll see that there's a new property here called Client ID Mode, which is a new feature I'll talk about in the next slide in .NET 4. And so you'll see that basically with IntelliSense, Property Grid, Code IntelliSense, and Debugging will actually filter automatically based on what version you're targeting. And that's an improvement over 2008, which would allow you multi-targeting, but would actually show you the IntelliSense for the full framework features for the older version of the framework, or the newer version of the framework you have in the system. Now will automatically filter based on just what version of .NET you're targeting. So let's actually talk about that new feature. So one of the things that people often ask for with web forms is, how do I get more control over my HTML, and how do I get cleaner HTML markup out of it? And one of the things that we did with .NET 4 is added a bunch of features to all of our web forms controls to give you more control over that markup and your what the page that's ultimately emitted. So specifically, there's a new ability to control the client IDs that are emitted on the client side of your HTML. You can now, instead of having kind of a long ID that is auto-generated, you can now precisely control the ID that's rendered to the client. This is great for both JavaScript as well as CSS. And we have that client ID mode property that I just showed. You can make it static, in which case whatever ID you give is what's emitted. We have what's called predictable, which is our default mode. This will still do a little bit of concatenation, but make it a little bit cleaner. And this is mainly useful for repeating scenarios where you have, say, a text box inside a list. We'll have it be like list row 1, text box 1. And then you can also have the default behavior that we have today where we auto-generate it. We also now do cleaner CSS-based rendering by default, so we no longer generate inline styles. This bypasses the need to use the CSS adapters that we've shipped in the past. Now the markup for all the controls is clean by default, and we support non-table-based HTML rendering for all the core controls. We also then have a whole bunch of view state improvements that you can now disable view state at either the app level or at a per page level, and then just turn it on the individual control level. That gives you a lot better ability to actually only use view state when you absolutely need it and avoid page size growth inadvertently. So examples of some of the HTML improvements. Here you can see I have a menu control with a couple of items statically declared. I could also use the site navigation system in ASP.NET to pull it from, say, an XML file. With 3.5 and previous releases of ASP.NET, this would render a table to do the menu, which at the time that we shipped ASP.NET 2 was actually the only easy, clean way to actually do it cross-platform against older browsers. Now with .NET 4, by default, we'll actually render a ULLI list that you can use to standard CSS to stylize however you want. Likewise, the form view control by default renders a table for positioning purposes. You can turn off the table now, either at the app level or on a per control basis, and get rid of all that router outer table stuff yourself. If you have existing apps that you upgrade, or say, for example, existing .NET 2 apps that you're running on ASP.NET 4, by default, we will run them with the or actually, by default, when you open it up inside VS and migrate the project forward, we do stick something inside the web.config file, which basically says use the legacy renderings. So you don't need to change. You don't have to update all your code to use CSS. But as you create new projects, by default, we use CSS. And if you want to still have the old behavior for new projects, just go into the web.config file and say use the older rendering behavior, and you'll still get that as well. But hopefully this makes it a lot easier to use CSS, client-side JavaScript, and have more control of your markup. We're also then making lots of improvements to the VS 2010 Web Designer. We now support CSS 2.1 for attribute selectors, Lang pseudo classes, first child, you know, all these features, much more interpretation of invalid selectors, just making it a lot easier to see exactly what you'll see inside a browser within the WYSIWYG Designer. We're also then in web forms making a lot of improvements around the URL structure and now give you the same ability to have kind of clean, logical URLs that are SEO friendly within your apps. So today, oftentimes if you're building, like, say, a product app, you might say products.aspx :category=beverages. For either SEO purposes or just aesthetically because you think it looks prettier, a lot of people want to do products/beverages that are more logical, restful URLs. Today, you can use a URL rewriter with IIS in order to do this. And the way URL rewriting works is it takes the incoming URL at the top, and then it rewrites it and actually executes within ASP.NET the query string-based URL. And this works okay for read-only scenarios. The challenge is when you're actually generating the URLs within your app, things like the form tag when you're doing postback will actually still use the rewritten URL as opposed to the original URL, which means that you just have to write extra code in order to clean all that stuff up. With ASP.NET 4, we're enabling the URL routing engine that we first introduced with ASP.NET MVC earlier this year. We're actually using that for web forms as well. And so now you can have both MVC controllers as well as ASP.NET web forms use clean URLs and route them to either a controller class or a web form class in order to process it. And that's actually great if you want to have a hybrid app. You can have some pages be built with web forms, some pages be built with MVC, but use the same URL structure. So let's see an example of that in action. So I got an app here that we're going to run. which has a products page in it. And so we'll say products. This will hit a database. So my database is starting up. There we go. And so basically I'm just saying products.aspx question mark category equals beverages. And I could do condiments instead. And filter it slightly there. So kind of classic catalog listing page. And the way this page is built is I have a list view control that is just displaying some information that's data bound. And then I have a code behind file that has a display category that's going off against the database using a link query and binding results to a list view. And then I have a page load event that's just pulling the category name out of the query string and calling that helper method. So you know, classic what you do today. What I can do in .NET 4 if I want to make it a logical URL instead is add a URL routing rule. And so specifically, I want to support a URL format that looks like /products/beverages or /products/condiments. And so the way I'm going to do that is in my global.sax file, I'm going to take advantage of this new helper function that we have in .NET 4 called mapPageRoute. And basically, I give it a friendly name just to name the route. I can then give a URL format that I want this route rule to apply to. And so I'm going to say everything that starts with products and then treat the second parameter or the second value in that URL as a parameter called category. And if I wanted to add a third parameter, I could do that too. And I could say page index, like so. So I can have any number of tokens I want within the URL. And then I can say map it to this products.aspx file that's at the root of my site. And so now anytime a URL comes in for /products/something, it'll get mapped to this products.aspx page to register. There's additional overloads that I can actually pass to this method if I want to set constraints. So if I want to say the value has to be a number or a string, I can also provide default values in the event that that particular parameter is not part of the URL. And then what I can do is I can go into my code behind and change this from request.querystring to instead say page. Route data dot values category as string. And now when I go into here, instead of products.aspx question mark category, I can say products/beverages and I have nice clean logical URL. And what's nice is if I looked at the view source of this page, instead of having the form tag emit a post back to the query string version, it's going to basically post to the same logical URL route version that the browser sees. And so I don't have to write any additional code within my app in order to actually use the routing behavior. So much easier way now to get clean SEO URLs and integrate that within web forms. There's two parallel questions. So one I heard, and then the second one will come back in a second. So one is, does it work in integrated pipeline mode? So the question is, so there's a feature in, so the question is, how does it work without integrated pipeline mode? So if you use IS7, we have a mode we call integrated pipeline, where basically you can use ASP.NET to process any request that's coming into the app. And so by default, you can do like extensionless URLs and have them participate. So the question is, what if you turn off the integrated pipeline mode or if you're running on an older version of IIS, like IIS6? You can make it work there. If you send me an email, I can send you a pointer to the URL. But basically, use the same steps that you do with ASP.NET MVC in order to enable extensionless URLs in IIS6, in which case it'll just work. There's a step you can do in IIS6 where you say, have ASP.NET process all the requests, in which case you can do that. Alternatively, if you don't have access to that on your IIS settings, so for example, you're in a shared hosting account, you can still use the URL routing engine, but you can still embed an extension within it. So send me an email and I can send you a pointer to that page and it describes how to do both steps. There's a second question I didn't quite hear. Oh, yeah, same question. Okay, cool. Killed two birds with one stone. There's a third question. Okay, yeah. Yeah, okay, so the question is, can the routing rules be set up in a config file instead of through code inside of global ASAX? We don't have a built-in config format for doing route rule mapping. What you can do, though, and what we see a lot of people do is basically just write our own little helper function that just reads a file and applies them. There's a couple libraries out there. I think there's something in MVC contrib that actually does it declaratively. And so if you do a search on routing ASP.NET routing rules and config, there's a couple helper libraries you can download that do that. In terms of other SEO improvements coming with ASP.NET 4, we have a new meta API on the page class that does description and keywords, so you can programmatically set those. This is particularly useful if you have a master page and then you have content pages based on that. You can then have the content page that has the notion of what content it's displaying, update it, and then the head control inside the master page will automatically pick this up and output the correct description and keywords. We also have a new response.redirect set of overloads that you can use that do a response redirect permanent. By default, if you use response.redirect, it sends back a HTTP header that says it's a redirect temporary. This basically will set the redirect permanent header instead. This is really useful where it makes sure that search engines will actually follow the link and correctly categorize your site. And likewise, there's now a response.redirect to route, where you can just specify the friendly route name and the set of parameters, and it'll generate. And this, again, will work for both web forms and MVC. And it's great if you want to mix the two inside a single app.